live on Facebook.
You're listening to War for Idiots, a podcast by idiots for idiots.
We're live. And the good thing about this music is I selected it.
Does this go forever?
No, but I reckon we need a new voice talent at the start.
No way.
Pretty rubbish.
She is awesome. She is awesome.
Costs people, what? Anyway.
No, people only listen for her to do the intro and the outro. Everyone knows that. Everyone knows that. All right, man.
Right, we're live. I'm telling all our Facebook aficionados to come talk, and I'll get onto our twits as well.
Are we live yet?
Yes, we are live.
You just swore again.
I know. Oh, I'm going to get fired for this show.
We'll just get it in post. Just edit it out. Just edit it out.
I don't do post. I'm lazy. Yeah, we'll discuss this.
We'll just edit it out. Are you sure it's live? It's not coming up live.
It is live, man. It's on the... Hang on. Yep. We're live. Yeah, I can see it on my iPad.
I mean, because you haven't wronged us before, right? So
I've never got it wrong. Remember the very first episode.
All right. Here we go.
But do we need to start again?
Yep. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, podcast listeners from all around the world. Hello, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, and welcome back to another episode of War for Idiots.
WFI Friday.
It's WFI. It is Friday, WFI Friday.
This mug says WTF. I don't have a WFI mug. Do you know why?
Why?
Because I want our listeners to buy them because they're limited edition. I don't want to waste it on me.
A limited edition. If you were to buy one, you could literally own the only one in existence.
Rumor has it, Major General Ryan has it. As
really?
Well.
Oh,
he's definitely got one for the show.
Let's put a bounty on a picture of that. That would be amazing.
Who can get a picture of Major General Ryan's mug? Let us know.
Yeah, fantastic. Anyway.
Hey, Luke, in the chat room. Good to see you.
We are your hosts. I am Rich the Mick.
And I am Mick the Rich.
This is why I don't let you do show notes. It's so confusing. And we are indeed...
It's funny because we're idiots.
And we are indeed the idiots that you have been looking for. And you have tuned in today. We shall be talking about the China-Indian border skirmishes. Something that is incredibly... incredibly contemporary, something that's incredibly topical, and something that has incredibly deep history as well. So I'm very much looking forward to getting into this. I've learned a whole bunch about that region in the world, getting ready for this show. So let's rock and roll.
And I haven't heard anything about that region because I didn't prepare for the show.
Yes, that's right. But always, before we kick off, I just want to thank you, the listeners, be it via Spotify, iTunes, the dozens of ways people listen to this podcast.
Deezer is my the funnest named one, Deezer.
I don't
listen to it, but I know we're on there.
Fantastic. It's great. However you're listening to this, look, thanks for listening. Keep on listening. You know, our the listeners grow a little bit every single week, which really helps us.
People watching us now. We've got 55 subscribers on YouTube.
Yeah, it's getting bigger and bigger.
This season,
we had two subscribers on YouTube. That was, one was Mick and one was me. But now we've got a few more. So, no, it's really good. We really appreciate the feedback we're getting. We appreciate people telling us what they like, people telling us what they don't like, and giving us ideas. Giving us ideas for shows. So thank you very much. But please help us get bigger and bigger. We do it because of you. So tell a friend, share us on social media. Hello to my mum who keeps on reminding me to call us the bald and the bearded. make sure you spread the word, but don't spread COVID.
Victoria, don't spread COVID.
Totes orcs. How's your COVID going?
Hey, my COVID's going absolutely fantastic. And I'll tell you why. I told you the other day how I got a pretty cool gaming PC. Actually, no, sorry, video and audio production PC that has an excellent graphics card. And I have discovered a game that's been around for maybe a year called Sea of Thieves, and it's like a massive multiplayer online game. I don't know what the rest of the term is, but mate, I am rubbish at it. My kids advise me on what to do in the game. But man, you can really annoy people, like some hardcore gamers. You can really just annoy them by just firing at them and then them killing you. And they're just like, why'd you do that? Oh. So man, my COVID's going good because I get to annoy people. What about your COVID?
Equally as good, not because I get to annoy people, because I get to live a normal human life outside of your pirate video game, of which I will make relentless fun of you for the rest of our lives. Besides that,
everything... jump on my Twitch channel and come harass me.
Yes, I will. All right. Well, tonight we're going to talk about some pretty, pretty interesting things. But before we do, we just want to send a bit of love to our major sponsor, and that's Good to Go Gear. G2G. Good to Go Gear is an Australian veteran-owned business that has been supporting its customers for over a decade.
Over 10 years.
If you are looking for military, camping, adventure, workwear, or first aid, they have got a wide range, and it's growing and growing and growing, and it is ready to be shipped directly to you.
Their range is like my waist.
What you Danny. Should do, but some people want to look at it. What you should do is you need to go and check out their catalog at www.goodtogogear.com.au and get the best gear that is truly G2G. Now, they offer a 30-day, 100% satisfaction guarantee, and they ship to both Australia and the US of A. So, I ask you, what are you waiting for? Go and check out Good to Go Gear. That's G2G Gear. Gear that is truly good to go.
Can I just say something, Richie? Like, we've gotten over the type of gear that Good to Go Gear offer before. I'm wearing their brown shirt. It's quite good for most military people that need shirts, undershirts. Yeah. But also just great PT shirts. We've got shorts. To offer a 30-day, 100% satisfaction guarantee on stuff that you can test literally as soon as you take it out of the packet. Like it's pretty damn reasonable. It's very generous, in fact. There's not really too much of their gear that you would imagine that you'd take, receive the package from the postman, and then you wouldn't use it very soon. Like, you're obviously buying this stuff for a purpose. So I just think it's cracking that they offer that sort of customer opportunity to test out and see whether or not they're happy with the stuff, because there's lots of stuff you buy and then you don't realize you're not satisfied.
I disagree. As we've spoken about before, mate, you're not going to use it. So it's like we're offering you something that you're never going to use. If you don't like it, of course we're going to give it to you back. I guarantee no one's ever returned it because
they use it.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a smart strategy.
Why are you saying "Hey Butts" on YouTube? This is a family show.
It's because my good friend Ian Butterworth is on YouTube. So calm down. All right.
For those other seven people watching us, jump on the chat and say good day. Don't be cowards.
So let us get into today's show. So we are talking about the China-India border skirmish that most people would be aware of.
What skirmish?
It's all over the news. Let me give you a quick summary.
All over the news?
From Al Jazeera just a couple of days ago. India says at least 20 of its soldiers were killed after hand-to-hand fighting with Chinese troops at a disputed border site on Monday night in the deadliest clash between the two Asian giants in decades. China said its troops were engaged in a, quote, violent physical confrontation, end quote, with Indian soldiers, but has given no details of those killed or wounded. Both Indian and Chinese officials accuse each other of crossing the line of actual control. We're going to talk about the lack a hell of a lot. This is the de facto border between the nuclear-armed Asian giants. So,
giant, like superpowers. But, mate, how interesting is the term, was it, violent physical confrontation? Mate, that's dinner at my place when we get McDonald's. If it's pizza, it is violent physical confrontation, right? We've talked about euphemisms and words before. How is that? That is purely packaged for the media, that term.
Yeah, absolutely. Violent physical. Yeah, absolutely. So it is an incident that's caught the world. It's got everyone's attention, and for many, many reasons that we're going to cover tonight. You know, the pandemic that we currently live in, the divided world that we currently live in, controversial, that we are sort of divided at the moment. It's a tinderbox, right? It's a tinderbox that is just waiting for something to spark it. And that's why you woke up to this. Hey, the two largest countries in the world that both are currently nuclear armed. Yeah, they're not happy with each other. They've just They've just had a violent encounter with each other. It's pretty scary. You know what I mean?
And what interests me, like a lot of people and national security commentators who should know better are saying, oh, have you seen this black swan event on the Chinese border? Now, I haven't really read the show notes too detailed, but I remember like my university days.
Yeah.
This isn't a new skirmish. This is not a black swan event. This is something that's been going on for a long time.
Absolutely. And that's why I'm so happy we chose to look into this topic, because I wasn't sure how deep it would go, because I was pretty ignorant about the whole thing.
For those listeners out there, I get no say in the topic.
I was trying to be nice. But it's been really eye-opening, because you're 100% right. You know, where we've been, you know, for a conflict that happens in 2020, where is this show going to begin? You know, we're going to start in 1858. You know, that's where we need to start this conversation about why the skirmish is happening today. So you're 100% right. It's not a black swan. The only thing that's unique about it is
how many percent right?
I physically can't say it.
All right, keep going.
But look, and this is why people are scared. China currently has the highest population in the world, 1.3 million people. The
Billion.
1.3 billion people. The PLA.
Okay. 1.3 million is how many people have COVID in Melbourne.
That's right. So 1.3 billion people. The armed forces, the PLA, is over 2 million active military personnel. And China has a stockpile of approximately 290 nuclear weapons. You look over to India, second largest country in the world, India, 1.3 billion people as well. These countries are neck to neck, 1.3 billion. It's only slightly smaller number in India. India has 1.4 active million personnel within their military forces, with a stockpile of approximately 130 to 140 nuclear warheads. So this is what is grabbing people's attention. It's just like, hey,
430 warheads.
The world is in a tinderbox. Now, to add this up, what border are we talking about? So I did some maths because I'm excellent at it. So the border between these two countries is pretty big. As a bit of an understatement, right? So it actually stretches. So the line of actual control,
LAC. I don't know. What are the? How do you say?
I think they say LAC. It is 4,056 kilometers long. That's 2,520 miles. Okay. Let's just put this into context. This is the distance from the very bottom of Tasmania to the very top of Queensland. That's the border that we're currently having tensions across.
The length of Australia.
And that is 3,860 kilometers. For our Americans, it is the distance between New York and Los Angeles. That's the border currently between China and India. That's 3,945 kilometers for those that are tracking. So nothing about this conflict is small. You know what I mean? No. Nothing about this conflict is tiny.
Nations are huge. Their arsenals are huge. The border is huge.
And most importantly, I think what we'll get to eventually is the consequences of this could be huge. So it's not just something that's happening out in the snowy terrain. It's not just something that's the consequences of these two giants going at each other is incredibly, incredibly scary. If it goes wrong. And I think it's something that's very, very much worthwhile, not only having an understanding of now, but having an understanding of why we got to the point of where it is now. So that is the background of what we're talking about today.
Cool, mate. This is freaking scary.
Okay. All right. So let's start with talking about the country.
I'm glad you worked so hard on that intro. Next time, just tell me to queue up. I'll put up some haunted house music or something on the soundboard. So really
bring it. Yeah. So like everything, I mean, can I just say, God bless the people that tune in on a Friday night to listen to us. Cause it's not often we talk about things that are fun. You know, it's like watching Black Mirror. You don't end up watching an episode of Black Mirror and you're happy by the end. You haven't seen an episode, I know, but don't watch it if you want to.
I've heard about the first episode. I don't think I can get over it. So I'm
It's a tough slog. All right. So let's start by talking about the history of these two countries that gets us to the start point of where we are where this conflict really starts. And the start point.
So 10,000 years ago.
Yeah, right.
So I mean, we're talking about two of the most ancient civilizations in the world.
Exactly.
Most advanced. Like, these guys were massive civilizations.
Exactly.
Had risen and fallen before Rome rose.
Exactly. So these are regarded as two of the most ancient civilizations in the world. Absolutely. So if we have to start somewhere, we're just going to start at the end of World War II, just to make life easier for everyone. All right. But if you don't start if you're talking about this conflict and you don't start at least in 1950, at the end of World War II, then you're missing the context behind what they are actually fighting about. So let's talk about each country individually, and let's start with India. So India has had a very long history under or with the British Empire. Okay, so the British rule came in 1858. We spoke about the start of our story. That's when India officially comes under the direct rule of the British Crown after a failed Indian uprising. All right, and it's a long history with India. Famously, you track down the timeline a little bit more. After World War One, between 1920 and 1922, you've got a young man known as Mahatma Gandhi. He launches his anti-British civil disobedience campaign. So he's very much against India being under the control of Britain and seeking for the independence. And as most people would know, Mahatma Gandhi, a very, very strong, powerful, influential character from the history of the world, the history of humans. But it wouldn't be for another very, very decades and decades and decades until we see a free and independent India. But the most important thing is that we need to understand is British was a very, like, it wasn't just a small part of the empire. It was, I think someone called it that the India was the jewel in the crown of the British Empire. And a couple of military examples. In World War One, over 1 million served in the Indian Army abroad in support of Great Britain. And in World War One,
Gallipoli.
Yes. And in World War One, India suffered over 70,000 killed in support of Great Britain. So not a small part of...
You might have had more casualties in the Dardanelles campaign on the Gallipoli Peninsula than any of the Aussies in New Zealand.
I'd have to fact check that. I'm not sure.
I'll fact check it. I don't really do much for the show. So I'll see you and drop off. So I might as well do something useful for the listeners.
No worries. And then in World War II, what we have is an India that provides to Great Britain one of the largest allied contributions of any nation. So there's more than 2.5 million Indian troops fighting on behalf of Great Britain all around the world. And a Field Marshal, Sir Cloud Auchinleck, who was the commander-in-chief... Commander-in-chief of the Indian Army from 1942, asserted that the British, quote, couldn't have come through both wars, World War One and World War Two, if they hadn't had the Indian Army, end quote. So I just wanted to highlight some of those facts because it was not insignificant. It was a huge part of the identity of the British Commonwealth and all the exploits that Britain had through World War One and through World War Two. But
the Gallipoli stats here, man, and I was really, really wrong.
Okay. Yep.
But there's it was up to 15,000, I think. Up to 15,000 Indians fought with Allied troops at Gallipoli. Almost 1,400 died, and about 3,500 were wounded, which is compared with Australia had 26,000 casualties, which included 8,000 deaths. So Australia and New Zealand still had more, but not too many people, particularly in Australia, would know that there were Indian servicemen alongside us at Gallipoli.
No, definitely not. And so what we have to remember is when we talk about India, if we talk about India at the end of World War II, we're not talking about the India that we have today. And I don't say that to insult anyone's intelligence. I was not aware of this. You know, it has transformed so much. For example, India, modern day Pakistan, modern day Bangladesh were all under the same banner of
India.
It was all India, right? You had a Hindu majority in the center. Now, this center would later become India as we know it today. And then you have a Muslim majority to the east and the west of India. And of course, these would become later on Pakistan and Bangladesh. Now,
those listeners who can't see the show, they're listening to it. Richie just pushed his arms out to the side.
That's right. Like I was flying.
I think that means east
and west. Now the division would happen. And that's all I'm going to say about it, because it is a long and complex process with lots of, you know, human line drawing in areas that says this is now, you know, that majority is Muslim to the west. You are now Pakistan. Oh, the majority of Hindu in the center, you are now India. Now, of course, the border between those two, there's always going to be people who are on the wrong side of that border. So there is mass migrations, mass slaughter, mass bloodshed. Absolutely. Like, absolutely.
Neighbors turned on each other big time. Just Gandhi.
If you just think about India's in the middle, you've got later on to be Bangladesh, but at the moment it's Pakistan to the east and to the west of it, both Muslim, and they're trying to get to each other, but you've got a Hindu India in the middle. It's not going to end well, and it doesn't end well for thousands and thousands of people, fueled by religion, fueled by a desire to be independent. But this is where we start our story about India, and that is what we described is known as the partition of India, which was in 1947, okay, mm-hmm. after the end of World War II.
Coincided with the United Nations was formed around either 47 or 49.
Yeah, it would have been around that time. And we'll go on to talk about how important this time is, I think, for all history in a minute. So that's the start of our story from an Indian perspective, okay? What was that, sorry?
Oh, I'm just yelling at Wikipedia.
Question from Luke. Was Churchill's opposition to Indian independence a worse bungle than his support for the Gallipoli campaign? That is a question that is...
Was the Gallipoli campaign a bungle though, Luke?
Oh,
it's bought the Allies time.
It's a great question. It's a really good question. I don't have an answer for that. I don't know enough about it to throw an answer, but I really like the question. Listeners.
Yeah. Let's not do revisionist history tonight.
Okay. But no, that's a great question, Luke. Keep them coming, everyone. Let's talk about China. Okay. So what is China doing at this time, right? So China...
I don't think Churchill was the Prime Minister of...
No, he was not. We'll fact check that, but I don't think he was Prime Minister of China. So at the same time that we see the partition of India, we see a very, very torn apart and ravaged China. Okay, so we got to remember at this stage, China has been occupied by Japan. Now, following the cessation of World War II, we have Americans who have a vested interest in China because, of course, China is very close to the USSR. But we also have a China that has been fighting a civil war for a very long time.
Yeah, I mean, we're coming up to the end of the century of humiliation, as the Chinese call it.
Exactly. We've got a war against communism, which is led within China by Mao Zedong.
Rebellions, the poppy wars, like China had been like just ripped apart.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, the history that leads us to this. So communist insurgency begins in China in 1927. All right. So they're already having the insurgency in the 20s. Now there's a cessation of hostilities. Now this insurgency lasts for decades. They cease it between 1937 and 1945. They agree, hey, we're not going to fight the civil war. Why? Because we have the Second Sino-Japanese War, which is an extension of World War II, happening at that time, right? We're going to stop this one war to fight another war. And as soon as that war is finished, back to the insurgency war. You know what I mean? So it is a ravaged nation. And I think we did an episode in series one where we did a bit of a deep dive into this, because I think it was talking about when did World War II actually start. And I think our answer was, well, it depends who you ask, because from a Japanese perspective, it didn't start, you know, at Pearl Harbor. It started well before that in the Sino-Japanese War.
Yeah. So, and the Vietnamese, you know, it was during the French occupation. Yeah.
Exactly. And then we recommence hostilities of the civil war or the insurgency uprising against communism in 1946. Except the big difference after World War II is that the communists have an ally, and that ally
The big difference from now on.
Say again.
I'm going to call myself the big difference from now on. That's a cool online name.
The big difference. You're true. It's like the situation. I'm the difference. They have an ally now in the USSR. right? So again, I remember we did the episode in season one where we talked about Manchuria. We talked about how the Japanese launched an attack into Manchuria. And then that in itself is fascinating. Really look into that. It's all about, you know, I think it was a lieutenant colonel just decided, hey, you know what? We're going to go into Manchuria. Next thing you know, the whole of Japan is in Manchuria. It's fascinating, fascinating stuff. But through Manchuria, they have Stalin, who is now directly supporting Mao Zedong against this war, this civil uprising. And then to fast forward history, we only have a certain amount of time. On the 10th of October, 1949, Mao Zedong proclaims the founding of the People's Republic of China. Although some fighting continues, this is the beginning of the contemporary China. So what we have now is a bit of contextual understanding about where India is and where China is in the 50s. And they are nations who have just been through such turmoil to become the nations that they are, right? Two nations brought through instability that are neighbors, two nations that were born out of conflict and massacre, with two extremely, extremely different ideologies and extreme different religious beliefs as well. And they both played a huge role in fighting Axis powers. You know, they both fought against the Japanese in World War II, but in many ways, they're also in the shadow of much larger superpowers. So it's a great start to the story because it provides a lot of important context for some of the things that we're going to discuss a little later on. And as you were saying before, mate, this time in history just absolutely fascinates me. You know what I mean? The end of World War II, what's happening between East and West Germany, what's happening in Europe in general, the artificial line drawing of who's going where, what's happening in Japan post-World War II. It is just an absolutely fascinating time in history, of which I don't think you can talk about many things that are happening in the world today without starting the conversation with, well, what was the context of that from the 50s? Because I, you know, the way I see it,
I can talk about anything without context.
No, you have to. Everything is linked. Name one thing that's not linked to it.
Well, whilst you were talking, I found the International Space Station Spacewalk is live by NASA on YouTube. That is not linked to the Chinese and border, Chinese and Indian border skirmish.
They're both space powers.
And by the way, I'm not watching it while we're recording a show.
You went so silent. You're so annoying.
It's Doug Hurley and what I love is YouTube auto captions. Have you ever, listeners, if you're watching us now, you might be able to do it live or go back and watch some of our videos. Put the auto caption on because we don't upload the transcripts like the AI does it. Yeah. They get so much wrong with Australian accents.
Oh, I could imagine. I could imagine.
Anyway, but no, I think you're right, mate. You got to.
And if you call this old piece, I'm just going to Hail Mary my zigzag and try and find him.
Is that you?
that was Twitch. Do not hit favorite buttons on your browser. What was
Mick Cook, Australia's leading military podcasters, ladies and gents, just amazing.
I didn't say I was my leading sound engineer. But you're right, mate. I think context is everything. And the end of the Second World War has shaped the world so significantly that we're still seeing them. And like, you know, our American listeners are still reeling from, you know, some of the unresolved issues of the American Civil War, which was well over a century ago.
Yeah.
And so what we saw being resolved in the 50s is, you know, Mao Zedong put it really, really well when someone asked him what he thought of the impact of the French Revolution in the 1789. And Mao Zedong was asked this after he'd seized power in China. And he said, well, it's too early to tell.
Mm.
That's kind of where we're at. Like,
that's fascinating. It goes back to that whole concept. You know, how can you possibly fathom someone that has a 100-year plan? You know what I mean? It's everything is connected, as we spoke about many, many times.
Yeah.
Everything is connected and things don't happen for one reason. Things happen for a multitude of reasons. So
seven reasons.
Which is what multitude stands for. So let's talk about the next step in our story. But before we do, just going to send a bit of a love out to our next sponsor, the Extra Specialist Group. Now, since 2017...
I think they're extra special.
The Extra Specialists have been connecting Australian veterans to the entertainment industry. Through their consultancy, agency, productions and training, Extra Specialists have been changing the face of television and movies and putting those who have served onto the big screen into your homes. They've worked with huge, huge studios, Marvel, Touchstone, Netflix, Stan, and much more. Extra Specialist is the place to go if you want to get into the industry. So if you have extra specialist skills or you want to learn some, then reach out to Extra Specialist Group and get started.
Keep talking. I'll be back.
Check out their website at www.extraspecialist.com. Mick has just left the live recording of the podcast. He can't hear any of this, but just remember who your real host is and who runs out in the middle of an ad. No, but seriously, if you haven't seen Extra Specialist yet, check out our Facebook. We share a lot of stuff that they are running. They were running one of their safety courses the other day and they put some video up of it. Really cool stuff. Really cool stuff of them doing some room clearances, some weapon training, some high wire stuff, some stunt training. It looks really fun, to be honest. I want to get involved. I want to get in a movie.
Just in case they need anyone as an extra in a Johnny Cash film. Have guitar, have sunglasses. We'll travel. God,
You're such an idiot.
It's a show for it. That's what the show's called.
I was literally talking about how cool their training is, and you've done the opposite.
It's all right. The viewers got to see my track pants too.
Oh, great. All right. So this is where we start to understand a bit more of the context. So hopefully we've done good enough of a picture for those that are listening to shape where China was in 1950 and where India was in 1950. And we see that already. We're talking about countries that have gone through incredible turmoil.
They're on the same spot. Like China.
The same spot. But we're talking about countries that have just formed and are sort of ripe for change and something is about to happen. So where does our story go to next? Well, the conflict, okay, the actual conflict begins with a little place known as Tibet. So Tibet is a extremely, extremely controversial place. And you can't, you know, I don't want to say city, I don't want to say town, because it is hard to quantify or say exactly what it is because of the controversy that's around it at the moment.
Tibet.
There's definitely a place, that's true.
It's not a city because it's bigger. It's got a capital city, so it can't be a city.
So
you don't Tibet. Have to call it a country, but you
should. So where is Tibet? Where is Tibet? Okay. So Tibet is classified as part of the Chinese autonomous region.
In fact, we have to say it's in China so we don't get targeted.
Tibet is on the lofty Tibetan plateau on the northern side of the Himalayas. It is in the autonomous region of China. It's nicknamed the roof of the world for its towering peaks. It shares Mount Everest with Nepal. Its capital, Lhasa, is site of the hilltop.
You knew it was a city.
Say again?
You knew there was a city there, so of course you weren't going to call it.
Yeah, there you go. So its capital, Lhasa, is the site of the hilltop Patala Palace. I was going to say hilltop hoods.
And that was the hilltop hood. They just walked in and said
and
that.
And once the Dalai Lama's winter home and Zhongshan Temple.
You don't live there now.
Tibet's spiritual heart revealed for its golden statue of the young Buddha. Population 3.18 million people as of December 2014.
Ooh, okay, that's a lot of people, man.
So Tibet is controversial and it's a little... It's a little like when we did the climate change episode. If you want to look up...
you denied climate change?
If you want to look up objective opinions about Tibet, it's very difficult to find. It's a very emotive topic. Mm. So a lot of websites out there dedicated to Free Tibet, freetibet.org, for example, is one that I did a lot of reading on. But China, needless to say, China has a very long...
Tibet. There's Free Tibet.
China has a vested history in Tibet. Now, China claims that Tibet was actually absorbed into China 800 years ago during the Yuan dynasty. However, Tibet at this time currently and continues to maintain its separation from China as an independent country because they have their own language, they have their own culture, and they have their own leadership under the Dalai Lama. So this is where we begin our conversation in 1950. Remembering we've got a war-torn China that's just finished suffering a civil war, whose government lost the civil war to the new government, which is the communist under Mao Zedong.
Chiang Kai-shek, they went and founded Taiwan.
Yes, yes, right.
Whoa, wrong button.
You just smash it.
I make a serious point, and the studio desk just goes, No, Mick,
you're an idiot.
Pick up your guitar and be Johnny Cash again. No, but you know, the nationalist government withdrew to Taiwan, and they still call themselves China.
Yes, that's right.
Which is probably a conflict we haven't discussed. Well, we could.
No, we absolutely should.
There's great stuff out there, but which is interesting, right? Because the way, like, since the victory in the Chinese Civil War of the communists, the way they have spoken about territory. Mm. So, you know, the communist China believes Taiwan is their nation.
Yeah.
And we'll come back to them. So, same with Tibet.
Absolutely. And so.
And they say it's defensive. They're not being offensive. They're saying we're being defensive. We're reclaiming our territory.
And it's not something that they're, you know, this is a different topic, absolutely, but very, very important to talk about. You know, when they talk about Taiwan, that's a non-negotiable. That's not a controversial statement or anything like that. It is openly stated that they will go to war over Taiwan, which is something that, you know,
yeah,
it's out there. You know, that's not a part. That's not a private policy. It's openly stated by the
Communist Party. I am making moves to get Taiwan.
Absolutely. So, it's fascinating to see how this has developed and continues to develop to today. So, when we look back at Tibet, what we see is in 1950, China, quotation mark, invades Tibet. Right, and invade is a word that is used in the vast majority of sources that you find. However, China describes it as they, of course, liberated Tibet. Yes.
Liberated and claimed
it. Right. Okay. So they went over, and let's just say that they assumed control of Tibet, which is a nice neutral term for it. All right. Now what follows 1950 due to this action by China is a decade of absolute insurgency by the Tibetans against the Chinese government. Okay. So we have more insurgency for China to deal with. This led to initially when they first went over and took over the administration, if you will, the 17-point agreement, which essentially stated that China will maintain its dominance over Tibet, but Tibet can have its own ruling. It can have its own government. It can have its own. However, what follows throughout that decade under the 17-point agreement is very much just suppression of religion, suppression and brutality against the Tibetans by the Chinese. Now, that's a very simplistic way to sum it up. This part of history is incredibly dense. It's incredibly dense. It's incredibly emotive. It's incredibly complicated. It is incredibly worthwhile further investigation. And we will not do justice that 10 years during this podcast. And we don't claim that we're going to. It just helps us understand the conflict that we're talking to today. So we skip forward, right, to March 1959, okay? And we just talk about through that previous decade, tension, and these tensions grow. And it seems that when you get to 1959, the focus now is on one man, the Dalai Lama. Okay. And he becomes the centerpiece of this conflict, right? And
his escape from Tibet.
Right. So there's a point in time where he is locked.
He's an action hero. Didn't kill anyone.
There's a point in time when he is locked in a palace, and the palace is surrounded by thousands. I think it's like 80,000 Tibetans, and thousands die trying to protect him. All right. And it is in March 1959, when the Dalai Lama goes into exile, he escapes into India, yeah. Right? He escapes the Chinese and establishes...
Like crawling through a rocky valley, I think it was, yeah. Whilst being shot at, like just...
Yes, insane. And establishes what is known as a government in exile in India, right? Very interesting. Now, when we spoke about gray zone tactics the other week, we spoke about the tactic that China has, which is any country that the Dalai Lama goes and visits and speaks to suddenly have economic sanctions placed on them. And now we see why, right? It's not because they just don't like him. It's because since 1959 or even before that, you know, this is tied into the history, the very grain of what China is trying to do in the 1950s. And Tibet, if you were to ask me a couple of weeks ago, what does Tibet have to do with the border conflict? Behind nothing. I don't understand what you're talking about. It has everything to do with it because this is
not going to Tibet. You go to Tibet.
You're such an
idiot. I'll give him comments at some stage in the show. You know, I just I did just have a look at the flight control room in NASA, and if our professionalism is matched to theirs, they've got a lot of junk lying around and stuff like that too. So we'd be good. I think we could command on this show a space flight.
Now, whilst this is happening in Tibet,
not the spacewalk, which is
not the space, not the space, not the spacewalk. While this is happening in Tibet, simultaneous to this, there are actual border tensions happening
at the same time.
At the same time between China and India, right?
Yeah.
So that is growing and growing as well. Why is it growing? Well, it's because no one has ever actually drawn the border between China and India. Okay. China has it written in their history books.
But basically, they didn't have some British dude like everyone else got to have.
Exactly.
Or a border that they could then fight over. They picked their own border to fight over.
Exactly. Exactly. So, and they were like, and you know what? Before this, they were, if you read about it, there's a lot of really good statecraft in this period of time. There's like, hey, we know that this border is disputed, but we're cool. Look, you own some of it, we own some of it. And there was a lot of diplomacy and a lot of treaties signed in the 50s that were just like, hey, we know it's a bit contentious, but let's just chill out, all right?
We're both trying to establish ourselves.
Exactly. But this all changes. And it seems to all change when the Dalai Lama takes refuge in India, because that's when the tensions really start. And the first step of the tension that we see is in 1961, when India adopts what they called a forward policy. All right. When I first read forward policy, I was like, yeah, okay, cool. You're going to put your troops forward. That makes
sense. Sounds like violent physical confrontation.
Right. Forward policy. And I thought, okay, here's the border. You're just going to push your guys to the border. It wasn't that. It actually wasn't that. It actually was quite ingenious, all right? So their plan was, and their plan is, and their plan did what they did, right? God, I'm amazing at this language. What they did was they put their military posts beyond where they knew the Indian border was, well into Chinese territory.
Yeah.
Why? Because what they wanted to do was draw the Chinese back from the disputed area. So instead of like establishing their border and saying, this is our territory, they went well past their territory and went, hey, you need to come back here a little bit and deal with us. Oh, you're back here. Okay, cool. That's the new line now. That's the new line. Okay, we're good with that? And then of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think the furthermost one was in Beijing.
Wasn't that far, you idiot? But I just thought it was a really smart tactic. It's
brilliant, isn't it? Like, because you basically create this dead space.
Yes, yes.
You're not even fighting over
and they're trying to pull back.
Their territory.
And I don't want to surprise you. I don't want to give away.
Hey, this whole thing's a surprise.
I don't want to give away anything. But the Chinese didn't like this. They didn't like it. They really didn't like it. They didn't like it at all.
Spoiler alert when you announced
it. I know. So they didn't like it at all. And this escalates to the first conflict between India and China.
The way Richie has written this in the show notes, ladies and gentlemen, is, however, this is not received well by the Chinese.
Don't remind myself. Come on, man.
Hey, fellas, just sell
them. Yeah. And so this leads to the first actual conflict. And that happens in October 1962. And this is known as the Sino-Indian War, also known as the India-China War, also known as the Sino-Indian Border Conflict. Okay? Yeah. Now, This podcast, this conflict is a whole podcast in itself, right? This is a conflict that occurs. It has two fronts. It has its own eastern and western front, because you've got to remember the border is ginormous. The vast majority of the terrain is literally Mount Everest.
Yeah, the border's the width of CONUS.
Yeah, sorry, what'd you say?
The width of continental US CONUS.
Yeah. So the fighting is happening in pockets. And so it has its own eastern and western front. This is what they refer to it as when you read about it. And it commences with the Chinese invasion of Indian territory. Now, they do have a lot of fighting. They do a 3-week lull in the battle. And it's very much World War One style. Stop. Okay. Are we cool with this border? No. All right. Well, no. Go ask him. Are you cool? Are we cool with this? We're not cool with this. Okay, let's go back to when you read about it, it's literally like that. It's like
Christmas cessation of hostilities on the Western Front,
and it's
soccer. Like, let's play soccer on Christmas Day, and then the next day, I'm going to shoot you.
And it's before Twitter. It's, you know, it's like, okay, can you please write to the leader and ask him if he's happy with this border? Letter gets all the way there. Who is this idiot? Tell him I'm not happy with this border. Letter has not, what do you mean he's not happy with this? So that takes about 3 weeks, and then they start fighting again. Now we're making light of it.
And I think right? they, I think they exchanged two letters. That's why it only took 3 weeks.
So. Yes. We're making light of it, but the casualties are quite significant. Now, anything to do with certain nations, it's hard to get the numbers, but what we have...
it's a polite way of saying a certain country lies about those who... That, everyone knows who we're talking about. They lie about casualties all the time, ladies and gents, but let's just go.
So the casualties are in their thousands. So one nation has 722 killed with over 1,000 wounded. Another nation claims 1,300 killed, 1,600 missing, 4,000 captured. So it's casualties in the thousands over this border conflict, right? So that is the first spark of the war. That is the 1962 border conflict. And it got me thinking, right? It got me thinking because...
Oh, man, I hate it when stuff does that.
Because it links...
Because then we get a show about it.
It links to... 2020. And the question that I just can't stop asking myself is, what were they fighting for? What were they fighting for? The terrain has no advantage to either country. It is just absolute barren, you know, Himalayans, huge hills. You look at the pictures, of where they're where the conflict is now, the outposts, they're horrible. Horrible. No one lives there. There's nothing there for anyone.
No.
What are they actually? Why? Why are they actually fighting? And this just got me thinking about, you know.
Oh, man, you're going to go down the Thucydides
path. Oh, it's happening. You know, fear, honor, and interest, right? Why state? Why some, you know, and you know what, Mick? I'm not going to say that I made up fear, honor, interest.
Because we've already done an episode where we identify who made it up, right? So we'd be calling ourselves liars, which we're not beyond. Like, I'm glad you clarified that because we can do that.
Yeah.
I can put it in the chat here. I can tweet it, and there will be people who believe that you cannot.
Yeah. Well, it's true. But I mean, if we look at it, right? Because if you think about conflicts, okay, a lot of conflicts in the modern day are all tied to interests. It's oil. You know what I mean? It's money. It's power. It's interest. It's a lot of conflict is by fear. This ties completely back to nuclear strategy. We must strike before they strike us. We must make sure they don't do this. We must make sure they don't do that. It's very much fear. But, you know, outside of romanticized conflicts in ancient history, you don't hear much about honor, radio, honor as being the reason why conflicts are had.
And the people, I guess people's understanding of honor is very different. That's me moving my chair, not flatulating.
Or both. A little both.
I would have jumped a bit higher, I reckon. But people's modern conceptions of honor are very, very downplayed a lot. And sometimes I would argue that people even think, would label things interest when it's actually more closely aligned with honor. People go, oh, it's politically motivated. Well, that's probably closer to honor and interest. But, you know, sometimes honor is a big player in the modern world. We just don't see it because we tie it to these ancient archetypes of what we understand it to be. We've seen too many Scorpion King movies and things like that where people go, oh, honor is, you know, about this, or, you know, Three Musketeers, on my honor, all that sort of stuff. But no, honor still exists.
Absolutely. And sometimes, you know, these I love these three terms because they just get you thinking, right? You know, sometimes honor can be linked to fear. Okay, so let's look at India's case. Why would they want to dispute this part of terrain? They've got a lot of other stuff going on, right? Well, maybe it's the other stuff that's going on that's causing it. Maybe by showing that they will not give, literally, they will not give any ground to China over terrain that they don't even need, is sending a bit of message to their current people that they're having issues with, which is Pakistan, saying, hey, Pakistan, if this is what we're willing to do against something that we don't care, that's how close it is to us honorably. Imagine a border that we actually care about.
It's what we're doing in the Kashmir.
Exactly. Imagine what we could do. So, you know, that could be a reason, you know, and why would China want to go into Tibet? you know, to me, that seems really honor driven as well. That's, you know, and again, I love how you talked about, you know, let's wait and see, you know, honor seems very much tied to that Eastern culture. Like,
yep.
Why do we go into Tibet? Because it's ours.
Yep.
Because it's part of China. It was 800 years ago. I thought we agreed to this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right. So those who study Chinese strategic culture, there's a strong line of thought in, you know, a lot of Chinese military or strategic theory that China's strategic culture is defensive. And the China as a state over the past 5,000 years has fought, you know, over 3,000 wars. And I remember studying Chinese strategic culture at university and reading an article by a scholar that was claiming they're all defensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, really?
Yeah, except for the parts when they're offensive.
Yeah, that's right. Like, but because of the way they frame them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And honor has a large part to play in how you frame a conflict.
Absolutely, mate. And if you want to talk about honor, two things that spring to mind. Why did America enter World War II? Nothing happens in extremes, but yeah. The bombings of Pearl Harbor is a strong motivator to get a country to involve into the war. You know what I mean? There was a lot of honor there.
Retaliation. Why go into Afghanistan? Why go into Iraq? WMDs, we know that. It wasn't oil either, ladies and gents. U.S. domestic production was well ahead of what it needed to be at the time.
Yeah.
It was honor because someone was the president and his dad had almost been assassinated by the guy that was leading Iraq. I'm not saying that's the only reason, but, you know, there's elements of honor to that. The fact that George Bush Sr. had his vehicle bombed by Saddam agents definitely would have influenced George Bush Jr. when he had his hawk saying, we need to go into Iraq. Why? Because they don't respect us. They try to kill your daddy.
And if you think, oh yeah, but that's just crazy Americans, you know, I mean, almost half our listeners are Americans. I love you guys. But, you know,
but it's not crazy Americans really. It's people, right?
But you could talk about the Falklands. Why did Britain send warships and amphibious forces all the way, literally across the other side of the world, into a conflict which it had no idea if it was going to have catastrophic losses against.
They had significant losses
against a country who literally was right next to it and had their own air force and everything. Why did they do that? Not because the Falklands was full of natural resources. It's a real shithole, right?
That's right. This it was to make sure there was safe passage for any sailors that wanted to circumnavigate the bottom of the globe, exactly. And to provide a rescue base for lost solo sailors, right?
No, it was because of honor. So it really got me thinking a lot about this concept of honor, which we pay off. We have, of course, fear, of course, interest, but this honor thing is really powerful, I think, and continues to be something that is echoed. And I think it's very, very much in the foundations of this conflict and continues to echo today, because the quest for honor within this hyper-globalized world, within this capitalist environment that we live in, I think still continues
to be a bit of that ideological honor, right? I mean, you know, China considers itself a communist nation. It still seems to have some companies that are doing remarkably well in the capitalist market.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's a fair bit of honor there, right? Because, you know, most communist nations have sort of, you know, evolved over time.
So there's a reason why the milestones for China going forward are all milestone dates that start from 1950 when the CCP is established. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's right.
This is the 50 year anniversary. This will be the 70 year. I actually love it because I'm real OCD about things being nice and neat. Yeah, absolutely. So the tension continues, and the tension continues through to today. And whilst it never gets as bad as 1962, it gets close very, very often. So the first one,
and off some and still skirmishes that people probably wouldn't even blip on the radar, right?
Absolutely not. So the next one that happens is known as the Nathu La and Cho La clashes. These are the locations that the clashes happen. Also known as the Second Sino-Indian War. Not as big, but it's a series of military clashes that occur in 1967 for about 4 days, of which casualties also occur. We then have a quiet period. And then in 1987, we have a third military conflict between the two nations. And then in 2017, we have another border standoff. And I don't even remember this at all. at all. Do you remember?
No, and we were studying conflict at the time.
We were studying conflict at the time. And anyway, when I read about the 2017 one, you know, ironically, an article from 2017, maybe 2018, was all about how it was an excellent lesson in diplomacy and de-escalation. We can learn a lot about the de-escalation between...
De-escalation.
De-escalation in 2017. And then, of course, it brings us to our present day, which is the 2020 China-India skirmishes. Now, what exactly happened? So let me have a quick look. Since the 5th of May 2020, Chinese Indian troops have been reportedly engaged in aggressive actions, face-offs, and skirmish face-off. What a great movie. And skirmishes...
Nick Cage acted, John Travolta acted. That's rare for those gents.
So what exactly happened on that conflict is still to be determined. That's how raw this is. And it's still unfolding, right? The best one I've come across, if you want to check it out, is probably ASPI. Does a really good analysis of it. They use satellite imagery. They use someone who's been studying this conflict for a very long time. And if you're a military nerd like Mick and I, they put the places of units on the ground and shows you what likely occurred. Wow. And their theory is the vast majority of casualties occurred due to falling off cliffs. Like this is the terrain we're talking about, right?
Being thrown off cliffs.
Being thrown off cliffs, but it's due to that. And it just gives you a bit of an understanding of the terrain. And of
this is hand-to-hand combat as well.
Literally hand-to-hand.
Hand-to-hand combat. So, yeah, you are... Has anyone ever? I don't know if you've read it, Rich, but The Hound of the Baskervilles, the Sherlock Holmes story.
No, I haven't read it.
It's the one where he famously wrestles with Moriarty and they go over the edge of the cliff. That's what I thought of when I was like hand to hand fighting people being thrown from cliffs. I'm like, just like Moriarty and Holmes. Very, very interesting. Like,
yeah. You know, yeah.
Horrible, horrible, horrible sort of way to conduct combat, right? Like,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. I don't want to be in that situation where someone's like, I'm going to fight you and throw you off that cliff. You could stab me is probably better, please.
Have you seen The Dawn Wall on Netflix about rock climbing? So I won't ruin it. There's a story about this rock climber that goes to one of the stands, something a stand to do this rock climbing thing, gets taken prisoner by some local gorillas. And then it leads to someone being shoved off a cliff. Crazy. I highly recommend watching it if you want to talk about being pushed off cliffs. Okay.
I don't want to talk about that.
let's talk about a couple of interesting things that do. And so if you want to research the 2020 India-China conflict, the vast majority of what you'll find is the history that leads to it, which is really good. It's really important to understand that. And there's not much work with regards to where is it now, where is it going. But a couple that I just wanted to raise up with you. One is from The Diplomat. It's called The Big Lessons of the Indo-China Conflict Borders. Don't work at high altitude. Catchy, super catchy, right? This gives you a good background into how the mapping of this region was done, both from an India and from a China perspective. And it really highlights that the two points. One, no one mapped this region because you can't, because it's too hard. Because without modern technology, you couldn't map this region, for centuries, right? And it was only until the 1950s did the region actually start to be properly mapped. And then the second point is that this part of the world continually shifts. So, you know, where you draw a line today is not where you're going to draw where the line is going to be tomorrow. So it shifts as well. And then the crux of the article is, look, it's not worth it. Just leave this part of terrain alone, which is kind of what we talked about.
No one's questioning your devotion to fighting each other.
Yeah, 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 exactly. But again, you know, that's from the perspective of a pragmatic approach to conflict.
Right. Where they don't have fear, honor, or interest invested.
Exactly. I'm only doing this for this tangible, transactional reason, right? But some things, as we've talked about, transcend way beyond just the transactional, especially when it talks about honor. There's another article this one's great. This one is from routers.com, R-E-U-T-E-R-S. Routers, .com. It's called US India. It's called the China India border clash stokes contrasting domestic responses. This is really cool because they do a contrast of how China media is responding to this versus how the Indian media, is responding to this, and the difference of what domestic response means to the countries as this tension continues. And what you'll read about, unsurprisingly, is big public outcry in India. Big public outcry about what's happening. And of course, what you'll have in China is no outcry over what's happening, because obviously the media is under a different control there.
Yeah.
So two interesting...
People in China probably haven't even heard about it.
Two fascinating points that come out. One, talk about honor. Modi, the prime minister in India, currently under incredible amounts of pressure to do something. And all his oppositions are saying, hey, what are you going to do about this? Are you going to do nothing about this? Is that where we are now, that you will do nothing about this border conflict? And he's getting a lot of pressure to do something about this conflict. And when you're being forced to do something, that's dangerous, right?
Yep, because you will make a choice that may be more relevant to your political position domestically.
Yeah, and, exactly.
What could deliver you a result?
Exactly.
It may not necessarily deliver you a result. Dangerous sort of situation for the country to be in.
And then the article talks about, you know, what's China's response? And, you know, Butts on the YouTube brought up a great point.
Hey, look, Andrew Carr's jumped in too.
Talking about China is facing a whole bunch of other pressures. COVID, needless to say, pressures against China, pressures against USA, pressures against Australia. We've been hearing that recently. We talked about Taiwan. We know about Hong Kong protests as well. And what China don't want to do is they don't want to completely push India into America's pocket. You know what I mean? They don't want to put up such a strong conflict in that region where India goes, right, well, we are 100% in with America, because that is exactly what China does not want to do. So, you know, talk about statecraft. They are trying to balance a whole bunch of things, inclusive of this border conflict. And they have to be asking, right, when we're talking about now honor versus interest, what weighs more? What weighs more now? Because they've got a lot of interests that are pulling them away from that honor spectrum. But again, they've been doing this conflict since 1950. So
it's the BRIC, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, they're the economic powerhouses that concerned, the US, Europe. They were countries up and rising. We all know who's taken the lead in the BRIC. China's done quite well economically. But then there's the other elements. You know, Russia and China, they share a border.
Yeah.
India and China share a border. I don't think Brazil and China share a border. I'll have to check Google.
No, they do.
Pretty sure they don't.
Yeah, they do.
But you look at what's going on here, and Brendan Taylor has a great book called I've forgotten it now. Andrew will know. He can put it in the chat, and then I'll remember it. But it talks about four flashpoints. That's the name of it, and talks about different things that might cause conflict in the Indo-Pacific and Chinese flashpoints. We've got old Chris Johnson on there telling us that honor weighs more. That's
great. Thanks, Johnny.
Excellent. That's good. Considering that Richie just made up the concept of fear, honor, and interest, I find it interesting that there's already scientific research going in there, but Johnny's pretty quick off the mark. But it's very, very interesting to see how these flashpoints may occur, not necessarily because of the pressures particular to that actual flashpoint, but the need to do something based on some other flashpoint somewhere. And, you know, what we're seeing now is a flashpoint that people weren't expecting to be a significant player in 2020, although it is a shit year. So why would it happen this year?
Andrew Carr raises, you know, you talk about throwing a spanner in the works. Okay, so we just talked about, you know, who's doing what? What's the deeper meaning? So what? And I'll read it out. Assuming it was planned. Okay, and he writes, the PLA is on a tighter leash these days. All right, that's good. But not everything it does is due to what Xi Jinping actually says. Now, that blows the mind.
It could have been a local commander, right?
Absolutely. You know, that could be simply it. And again, you know, when we talk about Manchuria, that was a local commander decision that ended up leading a country going into that other country. So,
you know, Jono used to be a good fan of saying that. And for those who don't know, we know Jono quite well. Sometimes men on the ground does what they think is right, regardless of what may happen.
Yeah.
And the person on the grid in this case could have been what sparked what might be the next Sino-Indian border conflict.
Exactly. And look, this is probably a good point to sort of start wrapping this up. The final article.
Wrap it up in a nice bow.
The final article is from thequint.com, Q-U-I-N-T. Its article is India-China border history, relationships, military rise of ethno-nationalism, Modi government, Xi Jinping.
That's how you pronounce it.
This is about where do India and China see themselves in the world, okay?
North America.
There could be no greater question than this right now. Huge, we're talking literally the two biggest countries in the world.
What is their view of their relative position to each other and their relative position to the US?
Right.
Two very big questions, right?
Exactly.
And they're also based on the fact that you've been watching the Spacewalk All show while I've been carrying the bloody episode. Both countries also... In the global space race, China has landed on the dark side of the moon. They've got a thing out there. So this all weighs in on the honor, right? Like India does a lot of satellite launches. Lots of people don't factor these in, but they're all competing interests.
Absolutely. So what is their place in the world? Where do they see their place in the world going forward? What is their response to this incident on a world scale, because they know the world is absolutely watching what their response is going to be, and actions will speak much, much louder than words
for
what it actually represents. So, this article about nationalism, ethno-nationalism, both in India and China, what it means going forward is utterly, utterly, utterly fascinating. So, that's pretty much it. Mick, yep. that was the India-China border dispute, which continues to this day. And when we thought about this topic, I messaged you and I was like, "Hey, you want to tackle this?" And we're both a bit like, "Oh, I don't know."
Yeah.
But that's
we're not making a comment on it. Like, so for the listeners out there, I think it's pretty clear that Rich and I have absolutely no interest in landing one side or the other on saying who we think is right or wrong in this border dispute. I think it's near impossible to say who is on the right side and who's on the wrong side of this border.
And I
think that made it easier for us, right? As soon as we realised that actually we can't make a determination. This is not Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, yeah.
This is not the invasion of Manchuria. This is a border dispute which is really murky.
Exactly. And look, I'm reminded, so I don't know if people on YouTube can see, but I'm wearing a CrossFit shirt. So I'm going to do the next 60 minutes talking about CrossFit, if that's cool. Yeah, you're happy with that? Mick, everyone's cool with that?
I did do a Johnny Cash impression, so I'm sure I can give you some grace.
So every time I do a workout, with a CrossFit workout, I always start with, "Oh, this seems like it's going to be pretty easy." And it's never easy. It's horrible. And it's always terrible.
A bit like their commentary on public events in the US at the moment.
Let's not go there. But so the same thing happens with regards to these episodes, right? I always go, "Oh, this one isolated thing that we're going to look into, surely there's not too much history behind that." And I'm always so, so wrong. I'm always so, so wrong, before you want to take one step forward with this stuff, you've got to take three steps backwards first and understand the context of it all. And this one has been a thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyable one for me. One that, is so contemporary and relevant now, and hopefully one that all of our listeners has enjoyed. All right, Mick, any final thoughts?
There's plenty of final thoughts, mate, on this one. I think this is a fascinating case study because you can study it without knowing, not feeling that one side or the other is just.
Yeah, can I just lean into that?
You can have my final thoughts, yeah.
No. On that point, you may want to go into it thinking one side is just, but it's even more interesting if you're like, right, I'm going to read everything and then make my decision. You know what I mean? Like, if you can try to be as objective as you can, it's just a fascinating case study.
Yeah, it is. It is so easy to be objective on this one, even with the difficulties that lots of nations, including our own, are having in various areas with China at the moment. Economic discussions, discussions around the pandemic, discussions around some of their security and foreign policies. It still doesn't make you sit there and go, they must be the bad guy, because it's not. It's really easy to be objective on. I think this is one that a lot of our viewers and listeners will really enjoy getting into the details of. Check out the references Rich has mentioned. I don't read the show notes, so I'm sure they're interesting. But get in there and have a look at them, because I think what you'll see is that you can study this and actually give yourself a bit more of an opportunity to come in objectively, because most of the conflict studies you'll ever do, you will be subjective to them based on your cultural background. Like, you just, you can't avoid it. You just can't avoid it.
Yeah. It's a good one. It's a good one. All right. Well, ladies and gents, Potters, can I call them Potters? Potters?
You can call it whatever you want, man. I call them jerks. Jerks.
We just plugged Jono's website, Chesterfield Strategy, and he just replied, "Thanks for the plug. Tens of people are now going to the website. The service might crash."
Oh, don't worry, Jono. Yours is not the only website we're going to plug, and we only plugged it because you turned up.
Look, we hope you've enjoyed our episode and a bit of a deep dive on the China and India border conflict. If you have, then share it with someone. Share it with someone. Tell someone about it. Have the discussion with people. Grow your knowledge. Help us grow and keep the conversation going. It's only when we talk, debate, have arguments, and pick sides, and only then can we truly, truly learn. All right, Mick, tell us about some socials, man.
Yeah, man, before we get onto some socials, there's two projects we've got in the wings. There's one really, really big one. There's one really uncool one. You're leading one. I'm leading the other. The uncool one, ladies and gents, is just my Twitch channel. Just jump on and follow me on Twitch, because I've got like one follower and it's my brother. So it's really
bad. talks.
But if you want to watch someone who is absolutely terrible at playing computer games, it's really hard to find people as bad as I am on Twitch. Jump on Twitch and find me. But the really exciting news I've got, and this is something that Rich is a little bit more humble than I am, and I like to share Richie's news. Richie's got a new project coming up, and it's called Behind the Black Belt, and it is discussing the lives and the journeys of black belts of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is the martial art that Richie trains in, and understanding how they went through their lives pursuing excellence, which is really, really interesting. So I've been watching The Last Dance. I know Andrew Carr's a big fan of the Chicago of the NBA, and he's talked a fair bit on Twitter about that documentary. I'm not sure if you've seen it, Richie. It's about
I've seen a couple of episodes. It's awesome.
So your new show is better. Is better because
you made me think of a point. Right, I love that show. I don't like basketball at all. You know what I mean? But you learn about these people who you've heard about, right? And who have these fascinating lives. And it's immensely interesting just learning about them, right? That show, The Last Dance. So I think it's better than that. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, it's better than that, man. So listeners, what you can do, you can find it, you'll find it on pod channels, and we'll provide you the links for those. You can find it on Facebook, jump on Facebook, find Behind the Black Belt on Facebook. Just search for it, because I'm too lazy to give you the details. Go to behindtheblackbelt.com. On Sunday, you will see the new video. You'll see the teaser on there, Richie's first interview is with a guy named John Will. And it is just, I tell you what, being privileged in sitting back and seeing some of the content before it actually goes up, I think you'll love it, because it's discussing really personal stuff with people, and just understanding, hey, everyone's got a story, man. So really looking forward to it. Rich, well done on that show, but I probably should plug this show so we don't lose all our viewers to your show. Yeah. And no one gets to see my Johnny Cash impersonations. So if you're looking for Facebook, if you're a Facebook person, if you're a Karen, jump on Facebook and search for War for Idiots. Like us, share us, tell your mum to like us, and thank you for the rabbits. Jump on Twitter and you don't like on Twitter. Oh, you do. You like posts. Like all of my posts on Twitter. I'm at @Mick_Cook. Richie does Twitter, apparently. And if you go for our other account, it's at @War4Idiots. Sorry, Richie is at @Richie_TT. So make sure you jump on there. Look, you'll probably like Richie's posts more, because Richie will actually have a nice conversation with you. I'll probably call you a jerk. But that's okay. I mean it.
And because no one engages with me. So when they do, I'm like so excited. I'm like, hey, you are awesome.
You're awesome. You're my best bud. Whereas people tend to take a crack at me. Jump on. Also follow Chesterfield Strategy. Jono's got a great Twitter feed there. He found something that was absolutely fascinating. So when the news, did you see it?
Yeah, classic.
What Jono put up? Yeah, like classic. Like there's a news channel said the Australian Defence Force is sending 500,000 ADF personnel to Victoria for COVID. I mean, that's one person per
three
Victorians who are infected. You know, the Australian Defence Force could never muster 500,000 people because it's like 10 times smaller than that. So follow him on Twitter as well. I won't give out his tweet thing because I want you to follow us to find him.
Good one.
Now, also jump onto all of our online pages. If you're on YouTube, subscribe and leave us a review. Make sure it's a good review. If you don't like us, if you want to leave us a bad review, don't do that. Just don't ever tune in again. We don't need you to listen don't like us.
No, just download it.
But jump on iTunes, give us a great review. We love the support you're showing us. We're loving that the YouTube's growing. We're loving the engagement from people. And, you know, the fact that we've got people like Andrew Carr interacting with us, who has taught us and is just an amazing sort of scholar in strategic studies, jumping on watching our show on Friday night, actually makes me almost want to read the show notes.
When his name, I don't want to embarrass him too much, but when his name first popped up, I literally got nervous. I was like, oh, shit. I really did.
I remember the mark he gave me, like, I can only go up.
All right. And if you like engaging with us for the guys on the YouTube, watch this space. We've got another project that's going to happen after this season, linked to this season, where we're going to be talking a lot more with you. So
we'd love to talk with you, not just at you.
Exactly.
Might even bring my guitar.
Oh, no, don't scare him. Don't scare him away. All right. Until next time, this is Rich.
And this is Mick.
And remember that we may be idiots.
What? I say, but so are you every episode. Until next time, this is Rich.
And this is Mick.
And remember that we may be idiots.
But maybe so are you.
Doesn't say maybe in the notes.
Shut up. I just ad lib.
War for Idiots is a TDP production. All opinions expressed by individuals on the podcast are those of the individual and not necessarily representative of any other organisation. The music used during War for Idiots is Fireworks by Jazzar and is used under an Attribution Share Alike 3.0 international licence.